Translation by His Divine Grace. Srila Shukadeva Goswami said, O best of devotees, most fortunate Parikkhita, you have inquired very nicely. For although constantly hearing the pastimes of the Lord, you are perceiving His activities to be newer and newer. Purport. Unless one is very advanced in Krishna consciousness, one cannot stick to hearing the pastimes of the Lord constantly. Nityam nava navayam manam. Even though the advanced devotees continually hear about the Lord for years, they still feel that these topics are coming to them as newer and newer and fresher. Therefore, such devotees cannot give up hearing of the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hirdeshu vilokayanti. The word santa is used here to refer to persons who have developed love for Krishna. Yam sam sundaram achintya guna swarupam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. Brahma Samhita 5:38. Maharaj Parikkhita, therefore, is addressed as Bhagavatama, the best of devotees, because unless one is very much elevated in devotional service, one cannot feel ecstasy from hearing more and more and appreciate the topics as ever fresher and newer. Oh, please repeat. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, O best of devotees, most fortunate Parikkhita, you have inquired very nicely. For although constantly hearing the pastimes of the Lord, you are perceiving His activities to be newer and newer. Om Agyanta Marundasya Venana Sakalaya Chaktum Militam Jena Tasme Sri Garve Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vansha Kalpa Turuvyascha, Kripa Sindhuvyecha, Patitanam Pavam Vyo, Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha. I think right now Bhaktivedanta Manor is probably one of the most exciting places to be in. As we're seeing the manifestation of the Janmasthami pastimes. Oops. You know, coming and coming. And it's really, I think, probably outside of India, the most grand celebration of Janmasthami in the Western Hemisphere. It's really so amazing that driving in here and you see a little sign that's saying, watch out on these next, on these coming days, you know, Sunday and Monday, there's going to be a traffic delay because there's a Hare Krishna festival, you know. How wonderful. Anyway. Thank all of you who have been carrying the torch and increasing the brilliance of that torch for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada and spreading the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sukadeva Goswami said, O best of devotees, most fortunate Parikkhita, you have inquired very nicely, for although constantly hearing the pastimes of the Lord, you are perceiving His activities to be newer and newer. So last night there was a program. It was kind of small, actually. I think they didn't advertise it or something because it was quite a nice large hall, but just it was like a home program in a big large hall. And Radhanath Maharaj, who just newly arrived in the afternoon, spoke. And he was asked by Shruti Dharma to speak about Janmashtami. And he was relating one instant in New Vrindavan in the extreme early days, where Srila Prabhupada came along with all the leaders and all the devotees in North America, that because Srila Prabhupada was going to be present, it was like a consolidated Janmashtami, and except for, I'm sure, a skeleton crew at every temple, all the devotees came to New Vrindavan. But at the time, New Vrindavan wasn't very much developed. So the roads were dirt roads. They weren't paved. And there wasn't proper facilities to receive anyone. There wasn't even proper facilities for the people that were living there. And this included having no proper kitchen to cook in. And they arranged for a 7-day Bhagwat Sapta to occur for the 7 days prior to Janmashtami. And they'd made some kind of a little makeshift pandal up on a hill. So for 7 days hearing Bhagwat Katha, and then on the next, the 8th day was Janmashtami. And it was a labor-intensive production. Everything was really a very intense, intense labor to just get the simplest thing done, you know, to light a fire meant chopping down a tree and chopping up the wood into proper suitable pieces, and having to find a vehicle to go to town, because in those days devotees, we just didn't have our own cars, our own vehicles, and most of the, in New Vrindavan, I was told at that point they had one vehicle to their name, and most of the time it wasn't running adequately. But now so many people, they needed, you know, larger, either several vehicles or a really larger vehicle to get enough bhoga in order to feed everybody. And the kitchen was just out in the open. Some big pits, fire pits, were constructed. And for Janmashtami, there was an extra added, you could say, challenge or celebration, depending on how you look at the rain. But it was raining. And there was just a small little Bahulaban temple, which I don't know how to compare the size of it. Maybe if you just the very far end of this room, there on the other side of the doors, that could be almost about the size. And that was, the one third of it would be taken up by the deities, as well as Srila Prabhupada's. So it was not even adequate to have all the devotees come inside, so then the devotees would be outside looking in the window, and it was raining. And Srila Prabhupada was living in very humble quarters also, actually, at that point. Everything in New Vrindavan was pretty humble at that point. People were just sleeping in the grass out in the fields. If they did have a vehicle, they would sleep in it, or some people would sleep under it, or they would put up tents. But now we kind of have more, you know, sophisticated, even our tents are more sophisticated. And at that point, the tents were, I've seen photographs, I wasn't there. At that point, I was, not sure where I was, but I wasn't in New Vrindavan. I might have already been here. But they were just having some sticks in the ground and tying some cloth on top of it, and that was called a tent. So everything was very, very simplistic. And then, of course, when it rained, everything was like soaking wet. So the devotees had been going on and on for 7 days, and then came Janmashtami. So, of course, what do? You fast. And they hadn't been eating even all that much. You know, like New Vrindavan was kind of known for its prasadam austerity. And I remember Chandra Mali Swami used to tell me how he would be in charge of serving breakfast prasadam, and he had to count the number of chickpeas and or peanuts, whatever you were having that day, and everybody only got, it wasn't like you'd get a spoonful, you got a certain number of them. And the only hope of getting any more would be if your neighbor didn't happen to like that particular item, and then you could like beg him to give him the ones he wasn't going to eat. So devotees were generally on the constant edge of feeling a little bit hungry. So what to speak of when, you know, Janmashtami and a fast came, and then they were not only fasting, but they were doing nirjal. So that means from the day before and you wake up, it's Kaddish in the morning, and all the way until the night. So everybody is gathered in the temple room. Prabhupada asks for Krishna book and begins reading the advent of Lord Krishna. And midnight came and went. The reading was going on. Came to the end of the chapter. Maharaj is explaining, and then thus ends the chapter entitled da-da-da-da, purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Everybody was, Jai, Prabhupada, because they're thinking it's after midnight. Now we can finally eat. Prabhupada says, next chapter. So then the next chapter, which was a little longer. So you're hungry, you're tired, you're exhausted, and you're thirsty. And everybody's falling asleep. You know that falling asleep thing where you're like, you know, and your eyes get wide and you try to stay awake, and then I said the whole room was like that, and he was explaining how there was all the young sannyasis at the time in two rows, and all you could see were these dandas. That finished that second chapter. All the devotees were really Jai Srila Prabhupada. Now we can eat. Next chapter. So after the third chapter, Srila Prabhupada looks up and he said, I think you are very tired and hungry. Take prasadam. So when I saw this verse today, I was thinking about that narration. Because here was the spiritual master, Jagat Guru of the universe, there in front of all the devotees. And the transcendental pastimes and glories of the Lord were being recited. This was Vaikuntha, and everybody's falling asleep, feeling the pains of hunger. So here it's clearly explained how that is, because unless one is very advanced in Krishna consciousness, one cannot stick to hearing the pastimes of the Lord constantly. So therefore there is hope that as one advances, then one will get this taste, like Srila Prabhupada. He had genuine taste. Next chapter, next chapter. He would have gone on all night. But then he, out of compassion, saw that the devotees were struggling just to sit up and stay awake. So as one advances, then these pastimes will become newer and fresher, and our level of alertness will also increase. And he winds up the purport, unless one is very much elevated in devotional service, one cannot feel ecstasy from hearing more and more and appreciate the topics. So I was thinking, you know, this is also like a litmus test. How advanced am I? And we could kind of see from what is our attention span, how long we can sit and attentively hear and feel great ecstasy from the topics, transcendental topics. So apparently they've been studying the activities of the demons, vanishing of the demons. That's what I was told. And I was told, like, Aristasura, the vanishing of Aristasura had been discussed. And actually, it's a very important topic, these pastimes with the demons. Because according to previous acharyas, according to Vyasadeva, according to Narada Muni, discussing these particular pastimes is actually very beneficial to developing love of God. So a few months ago, I had had a class in New Vrindavan. It was about Keshi. We were also in 10th Canto. And I was looking for some more information about Keshi, the great horse demon who galloped into Vrindavan and, you know, asserting himself. And I came across a really nice presentation by Satyaraj Prabhu on this topic, with the help of demons, how one can actually make advancement with the help of demons. And he was relating how he had given some workshop or seminar somewhere on devotional service. And there was a young lady in the audience of Indian descent, and this was in America. And so she told him, "I just don't believe in Krishna." So he asked her, "Well, why not?" And she said, "Well, because he does all those impossible things, like killing demons, stuff like that. It's impossible to believe." So he was reflecting how, not everyone is going to accept the logic of the Vaishnavas, which leads to Krishna. But in general, most common people, they'll accept that God exists, or they'll accept the agency of a higher power if they can't bring themselves to acknowledge God. Or, nowadays sometimes it's, even among some devotees, they don't want to say the G word, God, because, you might offend an atheist or something. But still, there is, an acceptance of a higher power, something beyond our own, ability to control. So this type of faith or belief, it's called Laukika Shraddha. And the faith that assures one that the controlling agency or person is the transcendental cowherder, that is known as Aprakrita Shraddha. So Laukika, that means ordinary. And Aprakrita means that which appears ordinary, but it's not ordinary. So in the Nara Leela's pastimes of Lord Krishna, his human-like pastimes, sometimes they're difficult to understand, like killing all these demons, or just the demons themselves. I mean, just imagine, here comes Putana, this beautiful woman. She was so beautiful that her beauty bewildered Mother Yasoda, and she allowed this unknown woman to go into her house, pick up her baby, and put her to her breast. And then all of a sudden, this beautiful unknown woman became this gigantic, huge, humongous demoness that was just, bigger than a mountain with Lord Krishna on her breast. So how are we going to, perceive this in our present condition? It's a little difficult to understand. And what to speak of the pastimes with the gopis? So here we have, a young lad and some young maidens. And some of these young ladies, they have husbands, and they're taken off in the middle of the night, dancing around. And this is worshipable. So, that activity for a materialistic person is very difficult to determine, because they see Krishna as a debauchee in the negative sense, although we can see him in the same way in a positive sense. So prior to Krishna's meeting with the gopis in the dead of the night, we learn about these extraordinary feats, killing one demon after the other. And these superhuman activities are simply not ordinary. And this is so much so that, you know, they're so extraordinary that one might tend to kind of just dismiss it altogether and move on to some other topic. But if we do that, or if we deny the actuality of the demons, the truth and beauty of the higher rasas, particularly Madhurya Ras, will remain concealed. And at the same time, the demons that are within our own hearts will live on. So in this respect, it's a few words of praise of the demons is appropriate, you know, because indirectly they promote transcendental truth of the aprakita lila, or the hidden, the unmanifest lila, that lila which appears one way but it's another. And Narada Muni has, in his own way, confirmed this. He said that this is in the seventh canto, first chapter. In my opinion, that even devotees like me cannot attain such intense absorption in God as those who think of him as an enemy, like Shishupal. So obviously, Narada Muni, he's kind of putting himself down here. But the point is, demons like Shishupal, Dandapakara, and Kamsa, and others, by their preoccupation with the Lord, and then their ensuing pastimes, have brought out the glory of the Lord. So that's something to consider. So to approach Sri Krishna, as Mahaprabhu has recommended, is simple. When I say simple for the simple-minded, you know, if you're simple-minded, it's very easy. But at the same time, it's always not easy. So within Shuddha Bhakti, our pure devotion, there are many gradations of transcendental experience. So Madhurya Rasa, in which the devotee has absolutely no concern for himself, this is like the topmost, or the zenith of spiritual attainment. And it's more than Shuddha Bhakti, this Madhurya Ras. And it's like the best of prema. So how do we reach this goal? And how can we even appreciate that this is in fact the goal? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has shown us this through an analysis of the Chaturshloka in the Bhagavata. And he recommends that we take help from the demons. So Krishna tells Brahma to both directly and indirectly search out his ultimate prospect in life when he appears from it. And in the opening stanza, the culmination of his life's work, Vyas utters the same thing, anvayad itarata, so directly or indirectly. But to do this, to reach this goal, we have to cleanse the heart of the anartas, the impediments. And the method for doing that is bhakti. So to achieve bhakti, one has to practice bhakti. So it may be unbelievable that these demons are existing, but it's hard to deny the existence of the anartas that are within our heart. And those are usually quite clear to us. So then the questions can arise that, you know, are the demons in Krishna Lila, are they merely symbolic? Or, you know, do they symbolize the anartas in our heart? Or do they actually exist? Like Putana, Bakashura, Agashura, so on. Are they, you know, real entities? And then if you're thinking like that, then you might think, well, what about Krishna? You know, what about Krishna's Lila and the gopis? You know, is that something that's real? And then some people may question Krishna himself. That is he just a philosophical principle? And when you realize this principle, then the idea of him being a person kind of evaporates. Well, these are questions that sometimes come up. But it's clear from the teachings of Srila Prabhupada that there one should never doubt the eternal transcendental existence of Radha and Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was very clear that the leelas of Krishna would be taken literally. They can only be taken literally. In other words, they're actually happening, and these people and these demons did exist. That the leelas of the Lord are quite different from what we imagine in our early stages. You know, just like when you go through, a child goes through the learning process, so in the first grade you get a simple math, 1 and 1 is 2. And then as he progresses, that same equation may be broken down into far more complex type of equations. Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai. And one's understanding and comprehension becomes, you know, deeper and deeper. So the reason behind Srila Prabhupada's insistence on a literal understanding of Krishna Lila should be clear just by he's given us Bhagavad Gita as it is. So by as it is, Srila Prabhupada meant Krishna as Krishna is, as he intended. Just like sometimes one may speak but be misunderstood by others who don't know the speaker so well. So Krishna has been misunderstood by many who have simply translated the text because they happen to know Sanskrit. So they've translated the text of his conversation with Arjuna, but they haven't taken the time or the means to know Krishna. I may say something in jest, in a joking mood, and be misunderstood by someone who doesn't know my lighthearted nature. But my friends, they'll understand completely. So knowing the speaker and the contextual framework from which one speaks is more important than just knowing the actual language. So who knows Krishna? And that's Krishna's devotees. You know. One who has attained Parabhakti, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, one who has become free from anarthas, that person can know Krishna. So to the extent that we're troubled in our heart, to the extent we're troubled by anarthas, and to the extent we don't take the means to eliminate them, we'll never be able to appreciate the transcendental reality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because these anarthas are just like a curtain. Just like when that curtain was closed, with these eyes, we weren't seeing Gokulananda on the altar, although maybe in the altar of our heart we were seeing him. But as soon as the curtain opened up, there he was. So in the same way, there is this curtain on our heart, the anarthas, the ignorance, that keeps us from actually seeing Krishna as he is. Even we can see the deities on the altar, and we know, we tell ourselves, this is Krishna. Krishna is non-different from his form, his name is paraphernalia. And at the same time, we're having to go through this step to actually, this is Krishna, rather than the curtains open up, and there's Krishna. There's nothing in between. You know, you just see him as he is. So that would be a really exciting state of consciousness, to perceive the Supreme Lord directly as he is. But when Krishna Prema is attained and all the anarthas are removed, we actually do perceive Krishna. We experience him directly. But in doing this, and we also have to have a suitable body, and because the material body itself is not suitable for the experience of prema, in which the beauty, the aroma, the sound, and the touch, and the taste of Krishna are revealed successively. So I remember the first instant that I kind of became aware of this, that we didn't have the capacity to completely comprehend Krishna and his activities, was in San Francisco when Lord Jagannath first came. And Prabhupada told us we had to get plates for him and offer the prasadam to him on plates. Now, we had been offering prasadam previously. We'd put all the pots in the room and chant Hare Krishna. But now we had to prepare a plate for him. He was here in his Jagannath Murti form. So one of the devotees was trying to figure this out. He asked, well, how does he eat? You know, we're going to make a plate, offer it. How does he eat? Prabhupada just looked. He goes, that you cannot understand. But then he said, he can eat with his elbow if he wants. He can eat with his knee. He can simply glance and taste it all. So that was really mystifying to us. But that is the case. All the Lord's senses are interchangeable. Our eyes can only see. Of course, you can taste sometimes with the eyes. If you're really hungry and you see some prasadam, you get a feeling of it, you know. But when Krishna, when we're perfectly purified, when all the anartas are absent, then we actually are experiencing like Krishna. And when he reveals his scent, the senses and the mind all turn into noses. And when he reveals his beauty, all the spiritual senses turn into eyes to capture the essence of the Lord's beauty. So the political, the sociological, the psychological, and all the other worldviews, these are like things of the material world, they have little value for the transcendentalists. For those persons who are filled with material desires, they will gravitate more readily toward these worldview topics because they are closer to the human material condition. And to this extent, we can think, you know, well, what is the business of a devotee then? So the business of a devotee is to remain in constant contact with the absolute truth, Krishna, 24 hours a day. This is from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So remain in constant contact with the absolute truth, Krishna, 24 hours a day. People will always discuss worldly glories. In other words, the worldview, all these other topics. People always discuss these things. And we shall remain inattentive to such talks. So, in other words, these things which are so attractive to the materialistic mind, they shouldn't bewilder the mind of a devotee. And then he went on to counsel, show respect to the materialists, but don't adopt their behavior or mentality. He actually said, mentally you can reject them. So, in the same way, symbolic representation or interpretation of Krishna Lila that is aimed at improving our understanding of the human condition usually leads us to believe that this situation is all in all. In other words, we get confused. We start thinking it's only symbolic. But these are interpretations. If they keep the picture of the soul in relation to Krishna, then they can be of some help. But if they miss the point of Krishna Lila altogether, the interpretations, and it's become relative, and then the person becomes confused or they even become doubtful. So the personality of Godhead is as real as our own soul, as are his pastimes, which are non-different from him. So Srila Prabhupada's insistence upon avoiding symbolic interpretations of Krishna is important, because without this, the ultimate reality could easily disappear, as it has in many of the numerous faulty translations of the Gita that profess to bring out a deeper meaning, but actually what they do is take you away from Krishna by not acknowledging that Krishna is supreme. Like they'll say, Krishna says, when Prabhupada would like to point this one out, Krishna says, surrender unto me. And some nonsense rascal, Prabhupada said, he said, Krishna does, you know, this doesn't mean you surrender to Krishna, but you surrender to the something within, you know, like. So even though Krishna is saying, surrender unto me, the nonsense, foolish person will say, but that's not what he means. So therefore we have to take everything related to Krishna as it is. Sanatana Goswami says, to who can I speak? Who will believe me when I say that Krishna, the supreme Brahman, is hunting for the gopis in the bushes along the banks of the Yamuna? In this way, the Lord performs his activities. You know, so that which is inconceivable to the ordinary people is as much so to the great thinkers. You know, it's both things to so-called great thinkers and ordinary people. They can't imagine this inconceivable situation that, you know, both immanent and transcendental at the same time. And what to speak of the Supreme Lord looking for the gopis in the bushes along the banks of the Yamuna. You know, so this is like beyond their intellectual comprehension because of the anarthas in their heart. So by grasping the important philosophical points of the Leela and then assimilating them into one's life of devotional sadhana, it becomes possible to experience transcendental reality as our bhakti or our devotion develops. As we know the saying, religion without knowledge is mere sentiment, and then that is turning into fanaticism. So, Sukadeva Goswami also concluded his description in the Rasa Leela with an important verse, which intended to guide the practitioner. And he described the efesi of hearing about Sri Krishna's Rasa Leela and his pastimes and in general. So in the pastimes in general, so in other words, not just the Rasa Leela. And in doing so, he has used the name Vishnu rather than Krishna to help us appreciate the fact that these pastimes are the pastimes of God. So by using the name Vishnu, he also indicated that the indirect cultivation of parabhakti via discussion of the pastimes, so talking about these pastimes in which the demons are killed, is very appropriate course to coming to a deeper understanding and realization. And Jiva Goswami has also indirectly confirmed this in his commentary, stressing the word dhira, which means controlling the senses, because only one who has controlled the senses, having cleansed one heart, can become freed from the remaining traces of lust and desire and actually have some understanding and grasp of the deeper meaning in Krishna's pastimes. In the Chaitanya Leela, like the Krishna Leela, there's the two sides. So as Vishnu within the Swayam Bhagavan killed Putana, in the Yuga avatar of Sri Chaitanya, he delivered people from the transcendent, from their demoniac tendencies. And then as he delivered these people, he was also giving them unparalleled love of God. And he did this through Nam Sankirtan, chanting of the holy name. And through this process, of course, in the inner demons, the unwanted desires are destroyed and our hearts are cleansed and allow us to continue cultivating love of God. So Krishnadas Kaviraj has mentioned this in Chaitanya Charitamrita that it's Vishnu who is present within the body of Krishna through whom he kills the demons. And thus, the demons is killing demons is like the secondary activity. And the main reason for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I will speak. So the main reason is bestowing love of God. He explains how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching campaign is indirect or secondary, that, you know, killing the demons is incidental. But cultivating love of God, this is the primary principle or primary reason for his appearance. So had Mahaprabhu not appeared, then no one would have known about the super excellent Madhurya Ras. So by his grace, we find this very secret path to Krishna Leela, and we can appreciate even the demons along the way, knowing that the only enemy is within our own hearts. And if we understand this, then we can also do wonderful, impossible activities on behalf of Krishna. So it's not that Krishna